From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das.
I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology
and how they will
transform our lives,
work, and play
as we know it.
Welcome to Tech Cetera. This is your favorite tech podcast where we, as always, discuss a lot of our gadget buying decisions as well as policy, space, the multiverse, as well as user privacy. So as you can see, we cover a fairly wide gamut of topics. And interestingly enough, while last week when Leslie, Deepthi and I were recording our usual weekly escapades, we happened to strike on a consensus between the three of us, which is pretty rare of late. But it struck us that, the younger generation, when it comes to them sharing data on public platforms, they might not be the most concerned about user privacy. And that is leading to a wide range of issues, even as we keep speaking about how AI can manipulate content with the upcoming elections. On that note, we are joined today by a very, very special guest, Dr. Pawan Duggal, who is an advocate at the Supreme Court of India. He has been one of the most pioneering voices in cybersecurity and privacy in India, well before cybersecurity and data privacy and all became commonplace discourse in India. Dr. Duggal has been working on this for the longest time. Pawan, thank you so much for taking time out and joining us at our podcast, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be with you on your podcast.
Thank you. Now, Leslie, of course, has known Pawan for, what, 2 decades or probably a little more than that?
Yes, it is.
So they go way back. So maybe, I'd probably start with Leslie and Pawan, if you both would want to touch upon how cybersecurity and data privacy and all, I mean, 2 decades ago, it's probably non-existent. But technology itself was such a concept that for a lot of people, it was all new. From there, we've come to a point today where, data privacy is mainstream, commonplace discourse. Everybody speaks about it. There are thousands of issues, policies, ministries talking about it and so on. So where are we today in terms of, a commonplace understanding of cybersecurity and data privacy issues?
I think for the listeners, I think something that I would like to share is that Pawan is one of the foremost, cyber law experts in this country. And we have had very long conversations on many things. I mean, right from when the Indian IT Act 2000 was formulated, when the rules 2011 came in. Of course, now we are also talking about the Digital India Act being framed and a multitude of things. So in fact, actually, whenever the media, most media persons, whenever they want clarity as to what the kind of laws are, and how they, what kind of impact does it have on individuals, on enterprises, etc. Pawan is always the go-to person, the go-to lawyer, and of course, privileged to have him also as a friend. And our conversations, Pawan, I distinctly remember that we used to hardly, speak about user consent at that point in time. I mean, yes, it was an integral part of it even then, but, it wasn't, an important discussion way back when these laws were. And the complete history of the law. So probably our listeners would love to get some perspective around user consent and the current issues that we're facing.
Thanks, Leslie. First and foremost, it's a pleasure to be with you on this podcast. Well, I've actually seen time traveling at a very quick pace. And if there's one thing that technology has taught me, it is that it's always going to remind you that you are far, far behind in terms of catch-up. Now, this catch-up is a constant process of, shall I say, improvement, shall I say, getting up to date. But the reality is there's been a sea change in the way how the technical transformation has taken place on the landscape. I take you to 15th of August, 1995. That was the day internet was commercially introduced in India. Now, from those days, when we just had a couple of hundreds, a couple of thousand users, to the late 90s, when we started to see a big dot-com boom, which continued for a couple of years before we saw the dot-com bust. And then subsequently, a more robust but slow but steady maturing of the technological process. But meanwhile, one thing that was remarkably unique in the Indian journey was that 1995 was also the triggering point where the mobile revolution started evolving very rapidly in the Indian context. Right from a time when it will cost you 32 rupees per minute for an incoming call to today, where your mobile has become the intrinsic backbone of the digital economy. It's been a long journey. But all said and done, I found that with each passing couple of years, there have been changes in the way how the evolution of technological paradigms has evolved. Well, when we began in 1995, there was nothing. It was all about this wild, wild west phenomenon, and there was no need for regulation. And then it was only the United Nations which started batting in 1996 about the world to have some kind of regulation by it coming up with a universal model law on electronic commerce. Something that got emulated by various nations, including India, as India came across with the IT Act in the year 2000. But when the parliament passed this law in the year 2000, nobody in parliament had the slightest of clue of what they were passing. They thought it's a normal technical legislation and it's passed and done away with it. Little did they realize that they were creating history, as over the next few years, it became increasingly very clear that the Indian Information Technology Act 2000 evolved as the mother legislation for everything pertaining to the digital format. So in India, if you deal with any of the seven raw materials, that is, if you deal with computers, computer systems, computer networks, computer resources, communication devices, as also data and information in the electronic form, this is the legislation that's the go-to legislation. No wonder in the last 24 years, this legislation has evolved from just being a mere e-commerce enabling legislation to India's one of the three most significant legislations in the Indian history. Why? Because anything digital tends to get covered. But mind you, in the year 2000, cybersecurity, privacy were not the calling points. The law was not even bothered about that. Yes, the law was bothered about maintaining the authenticity and veracity of data on systems, but cybersecurity was something that was not being talked about much. It's only about 8 years later when the Mumbai attacks took place, and the subsequent 30 days post the Mumbai attacks was a very historical action-driven period when we saw the passage of the Information Technology Amendment Act 2008, where India for the first time came up with a legal definition of cybersecurity under the IT Act. And then subsequently we began to start seeing a huge number of new changes. We had the IT rules 2011, and then it came on and on. But ultimately, it was the coming of COVID-19 that actually has triggered off a new kind of evolution of a new cyber world order. This is a new world order that's evolved, where cybercrime has become our daily companion, where cybersecurity breaches are the new normal, and where states are getting more and more powerful in terms of their technology-based legislations. So in this context, now with AI coming in, it's always a race to the next goalpost. And that's why everybody has to be up to date with what they're doing.
Right, absolutely. And in fact, I think for every listener of ours, this is essentially what Pawan took us through, is a primer on the evolution of right from the start of the internet to today, where our internet and our legal ecosystem stands.
We must ask Dipti, how does she feel about the primer? Dipti?
Yes, I was just going to get to that.
So basically, I was just trying to place myself in all the timeline that, Dr. Dukkal just pointed out. 1995, right? I didn't have internet back then. 97 is when, we first had internet in our house. And it was a dial-up connection and it took the longest time. And it was so cumbersome. Then when you spoke about Mumbai attacks, Dr. Dukkal, I was there. I was in the city. And again, I was a kid. I didn't understand, what was happening. And then finally, when you spoke about COVID, that was the first time that we were trying to implement AI synthetic voice, in our work. Because at that point of time, podcasters weren't able to record from their homes. And, there was this whole need for 24/7 news. And so our morning news wraps and our evening news wraps were in any case getting, done in the synthetic voices, in AI voices. And then there was this whole idea that was introduced to us about cloning, cloning RJ voices. Cloning RJ voices.
So you were trying to get paid for the cloned voice and you were trying to ease your work. And now suddenly you realize that voice cloning software is actually going to take away your job.
Correct. No, but so this was an ethical concern even back then when we were given the task to clone the voices. This was a very, very ethical concern for me because this is my industry. And, I was like, I can't do this to my co-workers, to my peers. And then I was told, no, we will then do it responsibly. We will do it. We will apply AI voice only in certain parts. Anyway, the whole project kind of fell through because back then, and this is just 2-3 years ago, we required at least 10 hours of voice, voice samples from one person.
3-second sample.
And now you require 3 seconds. It's moving. Technology is moving at such a fast pace. It's crazy. It's unbelievable.
And in fact, on that note, I think it's a good thing to probably, open this up for discussion as to, Pawan, how do you see things like voice cloning and synthetic? Synthetic content is a term that has come up across many policy discussions with big tech as well as in the ministry and all. There have, of course, been the good sides of things where it can help be an efficient co-pilot in many cases and so on and so forth. But how do you view this entire issue around, AI being able to clone people's voices or, very closely replicate characters in a video and so on?
Well, artificial intelligence is nothing but, can I say from a layman's language, a Rampuri knife. A Rampuri knife tends to get manufactured. It's up to you. You want to use it for cutting vegetables or you want to use it for murdering someone. Same goes with AI. AI as an algorithm, AI as a model, itself does not know for what purpose it's going to be used. Again,
right.
Its ultimate output is further going to be dependent on what kind of big data models have been used for training the same. But having said that, I think there is now increasingly quantum leap in terms of the growth of AI. And with now new tools coming in, and ever since 30th of November 2022, when ChatGPT got launched,
yes,
for the heralding of a new era of generative AI. So I think these things are going to be there. It's going to get more and more complicated. Already we had enough complications in human society. Now you have synthetic or AI-enabled complications and complexities coming in a large manner, which is also going to color the prism through which people are going to look at human relationships, human interactions, and human output per se. Recently, Amazon has reported that ever since ChatGPT got launched, the number of authors that have started writing on their books on Amazon platform has increased to a substantial level. And while some of them have been honest enough to use these AI programs for authoring books, a majority of them choose not to even mention the fact that they have used AI platforms or algorithms for writing their books. But then this cloning of voices, this cloning of faces, the audio, video, image cloning is now a given reality. So it's no longer just a Prime Minister of India complaining that he saw a viral video of his dancing Garba. It's now a much bigger challenge. It's not only that you will have to be a Lakshmika Mandana or a Katrina Kaif or an Alia Bhatt.
Right. Absolutely.
Today, everybody and anybody becomes a potential victim for being targeted by the misuse of these cloned voices and the video samples of AI.
Imagine,
right.
I have to say that this entire Mint etc. podcast is genuine by human voices without any synthetic voices. No voice cloning happened. No image cloning. We haven't used Google Blogger or we haven't used AI's voice engine or we haven't used Sora or we haven't used any such tool. I mean, each and every time look at... So, I mean, this is interesting, Pawan, that you say that. See, from an individual point of view, I understand the implications. I mean, everybody understands it. And probably as individuals, you know, it's like I always compare them. You send a child into a toy shop and you know, there are plenty of new toys. So the child will keep on playing with new toys. Similar with the ChatGPT, some of them have been, you know, using it to play around with the new tool. There are business guys who are actually using it to enhance productivity. And there are enterprises that are actually, you know, making real use of it by looking at the metrics and looking at the pitfalls, the limitations of generative AI tools. But when you look at voice cloning or deep fakes, for that matter of fact, which we the subject of this topic as such today's podcast, what other factors that enterprises should or companies or small businessmen, what are the kind of caveats that they should build in when you know, dealing with these kind of tools?
So two things, Leslie. First, seen from the perspective of the companies who are creating or who are manning these kinds of AI algorithms. For them, the advisory of 1st and 16th of March 2024, issued by the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology, Government of India, comes in handy. Here, this advisory is telling these AI companies, guys, please make sure that when you are using these AI platforms or algorithms, they must not go ahead and perpetuate bias or discrimination, and that they do not interfere in the integrity of the election process. That's for companies who are going ahead and offering these services. From the other side of the spectrum, where you're talking of companies who are only using them, I think we'll have to learn to start sensitizing users about the need for far more due diligence, care and caution when you're dealing with these kind of models, because now the distinction lines are getting blurred. We are now beginning to see cases where fathers are not even able to distinguish that the call that they received was not from their daughter, but was for a cloned voice sample. Today, these kinds of exercises are going to be used for perpetuating corporate frauds, for the purposes of creating more cheating, fraud, and a variety of other corporate crimes. So I think I see far more downsides and therefore the need for more due diligence and caution in this regard.
But Pawan, a follow-up question on this is basically because you have been dealing with a lot of cyber crimes and you have been training these police departments also. I know I'm well aware of that. Now, the kind of crimes that are getting are far more sophisticated than, say, even 2 years back, for instance. Now, how exactly, you know, would a cybercrime cell, you know, train itself to keep pace with these kind of technologies?
Constant awareness, constant training will have to be the only mantra. Constant training on these newly emerging tech tools is the urgent requirement of the times, as far as these cyber cells are concerned. Because now what's happened is under the broader cybercrime umbrella, a small new umbrella is developing. This is known as the AI crimes or AI enabled crimes, where you are either using AI for committing cybercrime or you're using cybercrime for purposes of targeting AI. Either way, the fact of the matter is the law enforcement agencies in the Indian context are not at all very well versed to deal with these challenges. But then they need to take solace from the fact that they are not alone. Globally over, we find that law enforcement agencies are behind the curve as far as trying to be up to date on AI tools. And that's a constant challenge, because every 2 weeks, we find some new milestone development happening. And unless you are totally focused on just capturing and trying to identify what these evolutionary developments are, it's going to become very, very difficult. But then the bigger question comes up is, how do we start using AI for fighting cybercrime? Just as the much bigger question is, how do law enforcement agencies deal with the basic challenge that now you have AI enabling cybercrime? Go on to the dark net and you find the most prevalent and the most popular model there is cybercrime as a service powered by artificial intelligence. So in a scenario like this, it's going to get very, very difficult for law enforcement agencies to find out that whether the ultimate perpetrator who committed the crime, was it a human or was it an AI algorithm?
And assuming, what will the courts do then? How will the judges really rule upon these cases?
There is also the prospect of lawyers and like legal firms themselves using AI in certain cases.
Even a judge used.
Yes. There's
so much of these uses cases that have begun to start happening. As far as the judiciary being prepared for it, well, the judiciary in different parts of the world has begun to start using on an experimental basis artificial intelligence. In the Indian context, the Supreme Court of India has been using AI now for the purposes of transcribing its judgments and for a variety of other purposes, including for clubbing cases. But then the bigger issue is the legal fraternity prepared for the use of AI? The answer is a clear no. Why? Because the legal profession was one profession that changed the least in the last 200 years, but is going to be one profession that will change the most in the next 5 years. Having said that, you already have now seen this new case where two lawyers in the US have been fined $5,000. Why? Because they went to ChatGPT and got the written arguments prepared, only to find that ChatGPT quoted there in 6 cases. They were completely fake, fabricated, did not exist, and the court had to impose that fine. Tomorrow you find out that a cybercrime has been committed using AI. How are you going to punish AI? Of course, you can't dismantle AI. You will not have jails for AI. But assuming also you have that, the ultimate liability of the creators of AI will have to be appropriately addressed. Right now, it's a very evolving and nascent stage as far as the jurisprudence on AI law is concerned. But I think it's throwing up huge number of legal, policy, regulatory, as also the ethical ramifications, which will have to be addressed by stakeholders as we go forward.
But in this context, won't the Digital India Act framework help? I mean, given that it is going to subsume the Indian IT Act also?
Well, as per information in the public domain, the government wants to come up with a Digital India Act. They said they want to even come up with a chapter on artificial intelligence. But that feeling is, the way AI is growing, there's no way you will be able to regulate or deal holistically with artificial intelligence by just a mere chapter or a couple of provisions. You will have to deal with far more comprehensive legal frameworks on standalone legislations as we go forward.
I was in fact going to ask you this, Pawan, that do our lawmakers and policymakers have a sound enough understanding of AI so far in terms of being able to create a regulation that could hold fort probably for the next 5 years or so?
You see, our lawmakers are not unique. They are having the same problems and challenges as lawmakers across the world. And they are expecting them to become AI experts when they come up with laws on AI will be a very unrealistic expectation. So most of the lawmakers are clueless about AI. Some of them have begun to start using some of these AI tools. But then the onus will be upon the government to take the inputs from the appropriate professional experts and subject experts who can at least guide the government on what needs to be done. Otherwise, let's not go an action replay of what has happened in Costa Rica. The developments in AI are those that much robust that you can start relying upon them to give you foolproof legislative frameworks. But yes, it's improving. Now, the latest models that have come in, they allow you the flexibility to ask them questions on how to bypass the cybersecurity of AI per se. And AI is itself able to identify the loopholes of security in the AI. Yeah. OpenAI has started working on a new project. It's called Super Intelligence Alignment Project. This project says that give us 4 years, and in the next 4 years, we will come up with a new kind of a super intelligence that will supersede human intelligence. And that's why I've said that if you have to now start building in legal guardrails, the time is now. It's not going to be later when it already has evolved and it's beyond human intelligence. So a lot of work will have to be done. Already, as per one estimate, there are 122 different kinds of legislative proposals that are under various stages in the legislative pipelines in different countries. I expect the next 12 months to see some massive development as far as the evolution of AI legal jurisprudence is concerned.
Right, absolutely. Deepthi, you had something to say.
Yeah, I was just wondering, now that we are all in the blind, what must we do as individuals to safeguard ourselves?
Well, to begin with, let's begin to start distrusting and mistrusting AI. That could be a service that we should do. Because Indians, I've seen in the last 15 months, have begun to started relying and, shall I say, tilting towards AI in a very remarkable and unique manner. More and more Indians are sharing their personal details on AI platforms without reading the terms and conditions, without being alive to the fact that when you are going to put your data to AI, it's going to become a part of a big data pool, which will be used for the purposes of training AI, which means that your privacy is going to go for a 6. Number 2, we must be very consciously clear that hallucination is a huge problem in the AI ecosystem. Yes. It's getting better, but it's not yet out of the ecosystem as yet. So you could have some paid models which can hallucinate less, but to say that AI is not hallucinating at all, as of now, that doesn't appear to be a very logical corollary. So it's going to be human mind, human due diligence, that will have to ensure that we are able to sift the hallucination out of the other content that's going to be generated by AI. Number 3, I think it's time for us to start using AI as a good slave, but stop moving in the direction of making AI as a master. Because AI as a master in any avatar, in any manifestation, would spell disaster for humanity. No wonder Elon Musk is bang on target when he says that artificial intelligence is an existential threat to human mankind. And now with super intelligence just around the corner in less than 4 years away, I think we have much bigger problems to start addressing. And therefore, there'll be a need for international legal frameworks and understandings on AI. There'll have to be national approaches on AI. And individuals will have to be realizing the fact that they will themselves have to be responsible for what they do, interact, or deal with AI.
Just one point that on the super intelligence part of it, probably I don't agree with that kind of an observation, because I think that's, I've been speaking to people like, of course, I've read clearly what Elon Musk has said. But, Mustafa Suleiman calls it artificial capability intelligence, which is one step closer and which seems to be more realistic. And I had a chat recently with Andrew Feldman, who is the co-founder and CEO of Cerebras. Now, these are guys in the thick of things. And of course, you have Yann LeCun, who is the Meta chief scientist also. He also does not subscribe to this view of super intelligence. So I think that's a section of people versus. I think, sometimes my sense is that this artificial super intelligence is a distraction at this point in time. I am not clearly... I personally don't subscribe to that idea. But having said that, I think it's extremely important what you said, to take care that mistrust of AI. We need to be skeptical, because that was it. It was always buyer beware, caveat emptor. So I think we have completely forgotten that. And we need to keep humans in the loop and have humans as the moderator out here, because we are trying to eliminate and say, everything. Your AI is going to be, kind of putting AI on a pedestal and making a god out of AI. That deifying of AI probably is a very, dangerous thing to do at this point in time. So and AI is not a silver bullet, as many have pointed out. It can do certain work. It will do certain work. Let's be realistic that India, you know, sort of trust human ingenuity also.
So I do have a follow-up question, though, before you start wrapping up, Souvik.
Yes.
Dr. Duggal, you mentioned we must also look at certain websites or paid models that can be more trustworthy. I wanted to understand, how can an individual gauge if, you know, a platform is trustworthy or not?
Well, in today's scenario, let's begin by the basic presumption that there's not a single platform available which is trustworthy.
Yeah.
You're never going to become a victim of any kind of criminal activity. Number two, today it's time where we'll have to come out of the herd mentality. Just because everybody is using the latest AI tool is not the reason why I should use it. It's time that we should encourage ourselves to at least read the terms and conditions, the privacy policies, the user agreements of the said websites in order to understand where exactly is our data going. How are they going to deal with my data? And what kind of data privacy or personal privacy of mine is going to be there when I use this? So it's time that you will have to start getting more cautious, more careful. Otherwise, it's very, very clear the destruction of our digital identities is going to happen at a much quicker pace than we would have examined earlier. The impact that AI can have upon my reputation, upon years of good work done in cyberspace, can come to a grinding halt if there's going to be just one oversight, one negligence, or one mistake. So therefore, we come back to the basic thumb rule of due diligence, care, and caution, which will have to be the guiding mantras as we navigate in these choppy waters of the AI ecosystem.
But also on a lighter note, it's good business for you guys.
I agree, that's a good business.
Yeah, continuing on that lighter note, I also just wanted to take note of the fact that for tackling an issue that has risen in 2022 and is probably going to become bigger in 2030, the resolutions that Pawan suggested, due diligence and sort of being vigilant, is probably a strategy that's been time immemorial. Just being vigilant about information that is being put out in the open is something that I think we've been asked to do since the start of time, probably. But on that note also, I also want to, as we start wrapping up, I also wanted to sort of get your guys' understanding on, when we discuss AI and new technologies, we come from a certain standpoint where we were born and we grew up in an era where we did not have these technologies available to us. Probably Deepthi and I had more technologies growing up than Leslie and Pawan. But the new generations have grown up with, Instagram as a regular thing that was there in their childhood from probably age 5 or something. And when I speak with a lot of younger people, their understanding and their approach to technology is very different from ours. Do you think there is an inherent difference in the way we perceive privacy, in the way we perceive, sort of synthetic content as a problem in comparison to what the younger generation does?
Well, there's an intrinsic difference in the way how we think and how the younger generation thinks. The younger generation is an adventurous generation. It has begun with a silver spoon in its mouth, which is internet access and internet connectivity. Having said that, this generation takes internet for granted. So much so that if you disconnect this generation from the internet for just about 48 hours, you see massive impact upon their thought processes. So I think the values are different because the circumstances were different. But this generation also does not really mind going ahead and exchanging its details for a cup of coffee or some stream bees online. I think this generation has to quickly realize that if your privacy, digital privacy, is going to evaporate, then it's going to be a lifelong loss for you. You will never be able to be single attack.
But Pawan, just as a counter argument, I know we belong to a different generation, but I'm also, you know, supporting the younger generation in this particular thing that, you know, in the chawl system, the hut, the tenements that used to have the small, everybody knew everybody's secrets. In fact, there were the doors used to always remain open, the windows used to always remain open, except that it did not have the viral effect that the internet has today. But, you know, that trading of information, whether it was in the sabji market or, you know, vegetable market, or everybody knew who's getting married to whom, what kind of this thing, what's happening in their families, what kind of troubles. It helped also, but at the same time, you had so many gossip mongers. They used to stand on the corner of the road, the nukkads, as they say.
They were the privacy problems of your era.
Yeah, I mean, so we had a very different, you know, the cultural thing was pretty different, except that, as I said, always keep on saying that the problem with the internet has been very beneficial in many ways and all that. But at the same time, that viral effect of getting a gossip onto Twitter and then, you know, the network effect that you have out there is like it simply catapults it into some other different horizon.
Yes, yes. On that note, in fact, based on our present discussion, I think, Deepthi, we should disconnect Shruti's internet for 2 days and see how it goes. Given that, yeah. Shruti.
For the uninitiated, Shruti happens to be our co-producer and she is present on this call. And she's a Gen Z and I think she will die without the internet.
Yeah, yeah. I think she would have left our chat by now.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like sacrilege. I mean, imagine some kind of blasphemy.
Yeah, let's like take her phone away for 2 days and see how it goes.
You take away Deepthi.
I will have to handle her after that. No, I'm not taking away her phone.
But you can take away Deepthi's rabbit instead.
Oh, yes. Pawan, for reference, yeah, the Rabbit R1 AI assistant, which was launched, I think, in January. At the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. That was the first episode of this podcast that we recorded.
Okay.
And the first thing that Deepthi, our wonderful co-host, who said during the recording was that she couldn't wait to buy the Rabbit R1 AI
assistant.
And it
is still not available.
And since then, every week we pointedly remind her that she still doesn't own it.
Yeah.
So until she's going to buy the AI assistant, we are after her life to make her buy an AI assistant to make her life easier, but also share more personal data with her device.
And then all my life, everything will be on AI.
No, but on that note, Pawan, thank you so much for being a part of this. Thank you so much for taking your time out.
Yes.
And it was wonderful to have this conversation. I think it's very important to have these conversations from time to time to understand where regulations stand, where our point of view should probably be aligning towards, and how we should perceive AI and data. They're not just keywords. They are, in fact, very real problems. They're very real powerful tools in the modern world. But also, they pose a lot of problems that if we don't really discuss in the public domain, could be a bit of a challenge. Before we end this episode, Pawan, if you'd like to share a final thought.
Well, my final thoughts are, be prepared for the unexpected. It's a wild, wild west. Still, as far as the AI world is concerned, as far as cyberspace is concerned, cyberspace is getting more regulated, but don't expect overnight regulation of AI. There are all kinds of forces pushing against AI. Therefore, please realize you are going to walk out in rain. Please carry a good rain suit, get a good umbrella, so that in the event it rains, you do not get wet. Just go back to your traditional concepts of due diligence, care and caution. Experiment. I'm not saying go on to the Himalayas and renounce the world. All I'm trying to say, you will have to live in this world with technology. Be careful of how you use technology, whether it's cyberspace, whether it's AI, whether it's IoT, blockchain, quantum, whatever. The reality is the new flavors and avatars of technology will keep on evolving. But you will still have to be called upon to go ahead and preserve your due diligence, care and caution as you handle your distinctive ways to the various challenges that these technological paradigms are beginning to throw up.
Right, absolutely. Thank you so much for wrapping it up so well. I think it was the perfect end to this discussion. And that brings an end to our episode for this week. As always, to our listeners, if you liked what we discussed, or even if you did not like what we discussed, our social handles as well as our email addresses will be available in the description. So please feel free to write to us. And that's it for this week. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Tech Cetera. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepti Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.